rise. The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. Please have a seat. Good morning. We have a full day of oral arguments scheduled here this morning. We have four cases that are being argued, and one case has been taken on the briefs. We'll start with the first case of this morning, which is Favored Tech Corporation versus P2I Limited, 2214-1409. Mr. DeFrance, you have reserved 4 minutes of your time for rebuttal, correct?
That's correct.
All right. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. In this case, the Board cut short its analyses of anticipation and obviousness by applying incorrect legal standards to the asserted grounds. Those mistakes led it to reject Favored's arguments and evidence out of hand, giving short shrift to the cited references and the perspective of one of ordinary skill in the art. This case should be remanded for the Board to perform a full analysis under Sections 102 and 103.
Just as a housekeeping, is standing still at issue here? It's not, is it?
My understanding is that P2I is no longer disputing that, but I also understand that the Court has its own independent obligation to assess that and satisfy itself of that issue.
Okay. All right. You may continue.
So I would like to begin with anticipation, and the Board made two errors when it was assessing anticipation. The first one was its refusal to consider the results of using one type of electrode disclosed in the specification of the Ballman reference, because that wasn't the only type of electrode that was described in the reference. So if you look at the Ballman reference, it describes an exemplary 1 cubic meter chamber in paragraph 47 of the reference. And it says in paragraph 48 that that chamber uses electrodes, but it does not specify the type of electrode that's used in that chamber. Elsewhere in the specification, however, the Ballman reference describes two different alternative types of electrodes that can be used in the chambers of the invention. One of those, the preferred one, is the electrode configuration where the outer wall of the chamber itself serves as an electrode. And that's in paragraph 35 of the specification. Now, the specification emphasizes that as being preferred. It's the one that's illustrated in the figure one of the specification. It's the one that's described in the preferred embodiment of the invention in paragraph 61.
And it's the one that, didn't you tell the Board, a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand immediately, that's the only embodiment that really would be used with example one?
That's correct. That's the one that we asserted to the Board that that's the one that we prefer, that's the one that person of ordinary skill in the art would gravitate toward first.
But I don't think you said gravitate toward. Didn't the Board understand you to be saying that was the only embodiment of example one?
I that's not what we said. I'm not sure what the Board thought necessarily, but...
Well, let me I think JA 86, at least, I think the Board indicated they thought that you were arguing that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood the chamber of example one, quote, to be configured with the chamber wall serving as one of the electrodes. I took that to mean the Board thought your argument was there's not two choices in how a person of skill in the art would undertake example one. There's only one way to do it, and that's the argument that they thought they had to evaluate because that's what they thought you were arguing.
Well, if you look at the petition, Your Honor, and I would point you to page appendix 86, I think that's the page that Your Honor referenced as well.
Yes.
You'll see that our arguments expressly indicated that that was the preferred embodiment, not the only embodiment. You can see that in the full paragraph takes up about the bottom two-thirds of the page, right around the middle. We say that Bauman's disclosure focused on that configuration which appeared in the preferred embodiment and was described as particularly suitable for coding large substrates. So we didn't argue it was the only one. We couldn't do that. And in paragraph 35 of the Bauman reference, it clearly provides two alternatives. So that's not the position we took. That's what the board understood arguments to be. I think that's another error in its analysis.
Do we review the board's understanding for abuse of discretion?
I suppose that the review of that question would be an abuse of discretion if you saw that there was some clear error made or some error of law made. I think based on what we said in the petition, you could find an abuse of discretion if that's the standard you're going to apply, because it is clear from what we said here that we weren't saying it was the only one. We said it was preferred, we said it was the most suitable. But that isn't what we said. It's not something we could have said based on what's actually described in the reference. So we explained why a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood at least this preferred option could be used in the embodiment of the specification, and then explained the consequences of that and that it would result in plasma filling the full volume of the chamber because the entire volume of the chamber would be filled with the gases and would be subject to the electric field applied through that electrode. But the board didn't get to evaluating that theory. It just rejected our theory out of hand by saying there was another option, and so a person of ordinary skill in the art would not envisage using the preferred embodiment because there was another option. And that's legal error.
Your argument is that the board did not consider that other option.
The board didn't consider our theory because it took a view that as a matter of law, our theory couldn't work because there was another option there. So we could not establish anticipation in the board's view based on the presence of this preferred embodiment because there was another alternative. And that's just incorrect under cases like Kennametal, which we've cited in our briefs and we cited to the board. I think that case is directly on point for the situation here. So the analysis in that case was finding of anticipation based on a reference that described a cutting tool that had certain features, and all of the features were together in one embodiment. I think it was a claim and a prior reference. But then there was a generic reference to applying a coating. And if you look elsewhere in the specification in that reference, there were three options listed for what kind of coating could be applied. And the one that was actually in the claims that were issued in that case was the least preferred, but it was one of three. And this court affirmed a finding of anticipation based on that reference, because it was permissible to view the reference in that way and to look to those three options as related to the corresponding disclosure and the embodiment that was at issue. If there are no further questions on that issue, I'd move to the next anticipation issue, which was the picking and choosing issue. That was the board's other stated ground for rejecting our anticipation ground. And on that issue, the board demanded that every single limitation in the claim be described together in the same place in the reference. And again, that's just not the law. That's not the way anticipation necessarily works.
What's the case that you rely on that allows you to do what you did here on
the picking and choosing?
But the board says that you did, yes, on the picking and choosing.
I think the best case for that issue is the Purdue Pharma case. That case has very similar facts to the issue here. So in the Bauman reference, as far as the picking and choosing issue, which the board flagged as being combining the 1 cubic meter exemplary chamber with the disclosed range of power densities that are disclosed elsewhere in the specification. Our argument was that the specification, and this is paragraphs 14 to 20, describes the invention as this series of parameters for performing a coding process. And it says that the invention is a method using these steps, and it says this method is doing those steps in a chamber, but it doesn't describe exactly what chamber size in that part of the specification. Elsewhere, there are two embodiments that describe specific chamber sizes, including the 1 cubic meter. Now, in the Purdue Pharma case, there's a very similar setup in the reference where there was a It was a claim to a pharmaceutical formulation that had a certain range of concentrations of an excipient. And it said, combine that with a drug, a generically stated a drug, just like the generic statement of a chamber at the beginning of the Ballman reference. And then the court looked elsewhere in that reference in the Purdue Pharma case to find a list of drugs that could be used, one of which was claimed in the claims at issue in that case. And the court said that could be the basis for anticipation if those two disclosures were directly related. That was affirmed in that case. It's the same kind of theory we presented here. We have this range of power levels that are described generally for use with a chamber, and then elsewhere in the specification there are two specific chambers listed. And our theory was that a person of ordinary skill in the art would see that the use of a chamber is related to the two chambers that are later disclosed. It's directly related. And that is enough to support a finding of anticipation. The board rejected that, again, out of hand, just took a shortcut and said, because these are in separate places. And you can see that in its decision in Appendix 14, I believe.
Well, what about the case of Money and Ink versus VeriSign, where we said that in order to anticipate, a prior reference must not only disclose all of the claim limitations, but disclose them as arranged in the claim.
Right. So there is that line of cases too. And.
But you're arguing something that's not that.
Right. So the analysis in Net Money End was that there were two completely distinct standalone disclosures of different embodiments in that reference. And the attempted combination between those two was not supported as a factual matter because it was found that those two, the two parts of those embodiments were not directly related. That's a factual finding that in that case was not satisfied. Here the board didn't make that finding at all. It just said because these are separate things, it is categorically impermissible for anticipation under Section 102. And that's plainly incorrect. You know, it may be that the board could make a finding that the range of power levels and the disclosed embodiments of chambers were not directly related, but it didn't make that finding. It just said they're separate, they're different in this reference. And that was a categorical statement of law that's incorrect. We'd just like the board to go back and actually consider our theory on the merits and make findings to resolve this issue. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. Unless the court has any pressing questions on obviousness, I think I've reserved it.
Okay, you can reserve your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counselor Maloney.
May it please the court. Now, the board correctly concluded that Favorite had not carried its burden to prove any of the challenge claims unpatentable. The board's analysis was both legally sound and supported by the record. It was Favorite's arguments and evidence that were deficient. The board properly identified three key deficiencies. Failure to prove that Ballman disclosed a plasma polymerization process having a plasma zone volume of at least 0.5 meters cubed, which is one of the claim limitations of the challenge claim one. Failure to prove that Ballman disclosed use of a power density within the claim range. In other words, failure to prove that the general range of power density disclosed in Ballman was tied to any particular plasma zone volume size, other than the two examples given, both of which use power densities far in excess of the range of the claim.
Well,
and then third, on the obvious...
Why is it that the chamber volume and the plasma zone volume cannot be coextensive?
As a matter of general principles, it is possible in some reactions for the plasma volume to be coextensive. The problem here is that...
Would a person skilled in the art understand that to be the case?
Oh, what a person of skill in the art would understand, the board made specific findings on, is that often, and actually typically, the plasma volume is smaller than the reactor volume. The board also found, based on the evidence, the expert testimony of Dr. Parsons and documentary evidence of other references, that whether or not the plasma volume The size of the plasma volume itself depends on a number of factors, the electrode configuration, process conditions, and a number of other technical factors. The problem with Faber's argument about Ballman is that none of that is disclosed in the example that they chose to rely on as anticipating this flight. There's nothing in example one about the electrode configuration, and their expert, Dr. Gleason, conceded that point. There is no discussion of plasma zone volume with regard to example one. The argument presented in the petition, and this goes to the earlier dialogue, was that in the petition, Faber didn't even acknowledge that there was a second option for the electrode configuration. Faber said a person skilled in the art would have understood the reactor example in example one to have used this outer electrode configuration because that configuration was described throughout the specification. That was a very strong suggestion that Faber deliberately made in the petition, that there was nothing else described in the specification relevant to the electrode configuration of example one. We then responded, and the board found in the preliminary decision and in the final written decision that Ballman discloses two alternatives, including using two parallel electrodes. That is the only fact that the board needed to find to wipe out this argument that example one necessarily had a plasma zone volume that was the same size as the reactor volume, because that whole argument was based on the assumption that an outer electrode configuration had been in fact used in example one.
But why does it have to necessarily be that? Couldn't, if you disclose two different embodiments and only one anticipates, you still have anticipation, even if the second one doesn't?
I would agree with that as a general statement, Your Honor.
So,
but here the problem is,
why don't you lose on this argument?
Well, the problem here is they are cobbling together separate disclosures of the reference, and there's no suggestion that a person skilled in the art would have pieced them together in the way Faber has. Example one is very short. It says nothing about the reactor configuration. They relied on that example as an anticipation. Therefore, it has to either have expressly disclosed the claim or inherently. The first problem was there was no discussion of plasma zone volume in example one. It's just not there. So in order to get that, they're essentially arguing an inherency argument that it inherently would have had a plasma volume that would fill the entire volume of the reactor. In order to make that argument, example one necessarily
would have been performed with this outer electrode configuration.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why wouldn't a person skilled in the art be able to infer that particular point you're making now?
The person of skill in the art has no information about how example one was performed with regard to the facts needed to assess the plasma volume. So a person of skill in the art could infer multiple different reactor configurations could have been used, but that's an obviousness argument, not an anticipation argument. Anticipation is, it's there. It's either disclosed expressly or it's disclosed inherently. And under inherency, a person of skill in the art has to understand that example one necessarily had a plasma zone volume of at least half a meter cubed. And in order to get there, a person of skill in the art would have had to assume that there was only one possible configuration, with the electrode being on the outer wall. Now, by the way, it was also pointed out in their reply brief that we didn't challenge the issue of whether an outer wall configuration would result in the plasma filling the full volume. That's not correct. That was a challenge point. The board just didn't need to get to it in its analysis. So, and the problem with the example one being an anticipation goes beyond this issue of the plasma zone volume, because example one was performed at a power density based on assuming the overall volume of the reactor was the plasma zone volume of 2 kilowatts per meter cubed. That's 4 times greater than the maximum value allowed in the claim. And the board specifically found that both examples 1 and example 2 teach power densities far in excess of the claimed range. And the board specifically found, back to the first point, that a person of skill in the art would not have inferred that the teaching, the general teaching of a broad range of power densities in Bauman would not have inferred that that teaching was tied to any particular plasma zone volume or reactor zone volume. So we are here with a substantial evidence, you know, standard of review. This whole issue that we're discussing in terms of what example one discloses, what a person of skill in the art would have inferred, with all factual disputes that the board addressed, considered all of the arguments, all of the evidence, technical evidence, the expert opinions, and made specific findings that a person of skill in the art, A, would not have inferred that example one necessarily used any particular electric configuration, and B, a person of skill in the art would not have inferred that the reference discloses a link between this general range of power densities stated at the beginning of Bauman and any particular reactor volume size or plasma zone size. That's what makes this case different than Kennemel and all the other cases that they're relying on. In Kennemel, for example, runners, the claim required was a cutting tool technology. And the claim required hardened particles, binders, and a particular coatings. And within each of those three elements, the prior art reference disclosed all three and disclosed various options for each of those three categories of components. The prior art reference clearly taught that they could all be used together. The issue was whether they had created so many permeations that a particular combination of the claim may not have been envisioned by a person skilled in the art. That's not our facts. We do not have any teaching involvement to use the low end of that general power density range with any particular reactor volume size. And that's a finding that the experts addressed in detail and that the board made, and is supported by substantial evidence. It's supported by the board's recent analysis of Bauman's disclosure itself. It's supported by the board's consideration of all the expert testimony on the subject, and these are factual issues that the board resolved. This board's only role is to determine whether there was substantial evidence to support those findings, and there clearly was.
Even if their analysis was sound, what if they misunderstood what the petition was arguing? Going back to example one of Bauman, at page 86, the petition does say things like it's a preferred embodiment, the full electrode example, right? Mm-hmm. Or the embodiment of the example. It talks about being preferred embodiment and I think exemplary. So did the board misunderstand what the petitioner was arguing, and what standard of review do we apply to that question?
Okay. No, the board did not misunderstand because the record doesn't end with the petition. The petition is the document where Faber said the reason a person of skill would have understood example one a certain way was because this electrode configuration was used around the spec. But as the record developed and we submitted our briefing and they submitted their reply brief, it was very clear that both parties had acknowledged that there were two electrode configurations disclosed in Bauman. And Faber's argument shifted to, well, but a person of skill in the art would have preferred to use the outer electrode configuration. And the board addressed all of those arguments. It didn't misunderstand Faber's arguments. It fully took those arguments on and my client's responsive arguments. And under those facts, the board found that the substantial evidence supported P2I's view, which is that a person of skill in the art would not have assumed and understood that example one used the outer electrode configuration. So I don't believe there was any misunderstanding there.
It seems to me at times that what this case represents is the board weighing competing positions as opposed to the competing evidence. Can you address that?
Well, the competing positions were based on the parties' competing evidence. There was obviously the patent itself and the prior references, but Both parties relied extensively on qualified technical experts, Dr. Parsons for P2I, Dr. Gleason for Favorite. The board considered those expert submissions, both the declarations and deposition testimony, in detail, and that's all set forth in the final written decision. These are very technical issues, what a person of ordinary skill would understand about a plasma deposition process. And the board was not persuaded by Dr. Gleason's opinions about whether a person of skill in the art would have understood example one to use the outer electrode configuration. The board also relied on Ballman's own teachings, the only teachings involved of what power density to use with a particular reactor volume are in examples one and examples two. That's where everything's linked together. Both of those examples teach powers 4 times to 6 times higher than the claimed range. I'd like, if I could, to turn to the second issue, the obviousness issue. Counsel indicated that as regards to,
Excuse me, sir. Yes, sir. I don't think that they got a chance to address obviousness.
Okay. Do I have a chance to speak to that at this point?
Well, I may have to give them the opportunity to time to address it.
Well, I will revert to it at a different point, Your Honor. The point was made that that the board found Favor's arguments to be cobbling together separate disclosures of Ballman. And the argument that we heard was that the court refused to go any further as soon as it found that those teachings were located in separate places in Ballman, and that's just not correct. The board went further. The board specifically...
If the board had said you can't combine different disclosures to get to anticipation, that would be legally incorrect, wouldn't it?
I agree with you, Your Honor.
Because we've said... You have to look at the reference as a whole to see what it teaches, and if a skilled artisan would look at two different embodiments and still conclude that it anticipates, it doesn't have to be all in one embodiment.
I agree with you again, and I also, at a related point...
But that's not what the board found here.
It's not what the board did. A related point is, for anticipation to be there, it doesn't have to be in an example. Our argument is not that it has to be an example. They chose to rely on an example for their anticipation argument. We said the example doesn't show two or three of the key details of the claim. But to your point, Judge Hughes, what the board said was not just that these are located in separate parts of Ballman. The board made an express finding, after considering all the expert testimony, that the general statement in Ballman of using that invention can use a broad range of power densities was not tied to any particular reactor climate. And so the person of ordinary skill was left with the conventional understanding that this is very complicated and what particular plasma zone volume or plasma power density would work with a particular plasma zone volume was not clarified in any way involving other than through the two examples, both of which taught power densities far in excess of the claim. If you look at the final written decision, it's very clear the board did not just say these are in separate places, therefore can't be anticipation. The board went further, addressed the technical issues, and its findings are supported by substantial evidence. I see I'm out of time, so excuse me, unless there are other questions, I'm out of time.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. DeFrisch, we'll restore your time back to 4 minutes.
I want to respond to a few quick points with my remaining time. First is that Council for PTO has suggested in the briefing today here that the board made all sorts of fact findings, including that a person of ordinary skill in the air would not infer or would not make the connections between the different parts of the Ballman reference to make the combinations that we've asserted in our petition. The board didn't say that a person of ordinary skill in the art wouldn't make those inferences. It said that a person of ordinary skill in the art couldn't do that. The board tells us exactly the basis for its decision. If the court looks at Appendix 13, the board addressed the electrode configuration at the bottom of page 13, and it said, "Fisher ignores the fact that Ballman also states two other ratchet electrodes may be used. In view of this, we disagree with the petitioner's theory. The board rejected that theory based solely on the fact that there were two different electrode configurations available, and said we could not look to the preferred one in that context. Similarly, to pick and choosing, the board said, and this is in the Appendix 14, the anticipation challenge is based on a combination of different features disclosed in separate portions of Baumann. Such picking and choosing has no place in the making of 102 rejection. And then further on it says, Baumann does not expressly disclose the use of the entire power density range in combination with the reactor having an overall particular plasma zone volume. The board is saying, because these combination elements are not expressly put together in a single example, that cannot be anticipation. The board didn't make any findings about whether a person of ordinary skill in the art would have gone with the arguments we were making. The board just simply swept it away and said these are legally impermissible. And that's incorrect under cases like Kennametal and Purdue.
Well, do they say as a matter of law it's legally impermissible? Why shouldn't we read that as, you know, they understand the test and there's just not a sufficient enough relationship?
Well, they didn't go through any of the tests. They didn't make any findings that there are too many options for a person of skill in the art to make this combination. They didn't assess whether those are directly related disclosures.
But they didn't also say we're not allowed ever to look at two different parts of an anticipatory reference, right?
Well, the board said we are rejecting this theory because there are two options disclosed. That says to me that they don't think they can ever do that. And the board said we are rejecting this theory because they're relying on disclosure from separate parts of the reference. Not because the person who's going there wouldn't do that, but because this is what they're doing and that's impermissible. Council talked about our anticipation grounds being based solely on example one. That's not the argument we made. We relied on Baumann as a whole, as is clear from the petition and all the arguments that we made from our expert's declaration. And the board, as I pointed out in Appendix 14, took the position that we would have had to show everything together, expressly combined in one example, and that, again, is not the law. And I also quickly wanted to point the court to Appendix 2042, paragraph 101. This goes back to Judge Starr's questions about whether we relied on, or whether we argued that the petition, or that the Baumann only described the outer wall electrode configuration. This is our expert expressly saying that Baumann didn't specify which kind were used, and referring to the outer wall configuration as preferred. Again, so that's consistent with what was in the petition. Unless the court has further questions.
Questions? Thank you, Commissioner. Thank the parties for their arguments, and we'll take this case under advisement.